This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
Listen, they're on life support, you know, regarding the playoffs, and so proud team. They came out and pushed in a third, and they were hard to play against, and they get that goal, and I liked our response after that. Like, even just the shift after, and we kind of had it in their end a bit, and then we ended up scoring, and it was probably a frustrating one to give up for them, but they pushed on us, and we were fortunate to get through it.
You know, another solid performance by the Lightning. It wasn't pretty, but against a team that needed those points more than Tampa Bay, for sure, the Lightning came away with a 6-2 win last night against the Dallas Stars. Tampa Bay now on a 7-game point streak, tied for the second longest point streak of the season. They own Dallas, 6-1 this year, 3-0 at home. They take them on again Friday. It'll be the last game of that 8-game series in the regular season. And Dave, for Dallas, still hanging on by a little bit, but I think all in all, John Cooper talked about it in the post game there, that they pushed. You anticipated they did, but the Lightning really didn't wilt. I mean, they were right there with them and made a couple of huge goals, a couple of huge plays, I think, that really hurt Dallas in this game, whether it was Braden Point or whether it was Eric Chernak, that, you know, certainly stopped some momentum that Dallas might have created. But I think you have to feel pretty good about where the Lightning's game is right now over the last month or so.
We had said when the Lightning and Stars played last week at Amalie Arena, the first of those seven straight for Dallas on the road to wrap up the regular season, and they were in a much better spot then than they were heading into last night's game, and certainly than they are this morning, that the Stars did not come out and really play with the sort of urgency that we would have expected from a team that, had they run the table, had they gone 7-0 in those last seven road games, they would be in the playoffs. Now, that's hard to do, but they had kind of a flat game against the Lightning last week. They pushed in the second period, but they were pretty flat in the first and then flat in the third. I thought last night they looked more like a team that was playing like they needed to stay alive. Now, they didn't overwhelm the Lightning offensively, but let's remember what the Dallas Stars' bread and butter is. It's structure and defense. And they were coming off a game, a 5-4 overtime loss to the Panthers, a game in which they did not play with structure. They were giving up odd man rushes in that game. And so they kind of, sometimes you need to keep in mind where a team is based on what has just happened and maybe what they are going to try and emphasize. And I thought the Stars settled back into their team identity last night and competed hard. That's kind of where I'm going with this, Greg. They competed hard defensively up until the point that the Lightning were able to pop in a goal late in the second. And the Lightning continued to push. Killorn scored in the power play to make it 2-1 in the final minute. Even before Braden Point scored, Andre Palat had a scoring chance right in front. And then Point did score after he stole the puck from Lindell. And then in the third period, it's a little bit of a different situation where the Stars are down two, so they really need to press. And the Lightning got some looks on counters. But for the better part of two periods, you know, the Stars D'd up well. And that has been a kind of recurring situation for the Lightning against a lot of their opponents. Detroit did it over the weekend. I think Columbus D'd up pretty well in the two games that the Lightning saw the Blue Jackets, whenever it was, 6-7 games ago now. The one team that really didn't play with a lot of structure was Chicago, and the Lightning scored 6 in that game plus an empty netter. They scored 4 last night with 2 empty netters. But they had a harder time generating scoring chances last night than they did in that game in Chicago, for sure. So let's give credit to the Stars for defending as hard as they did until the game started to get away from them. And then they had to open things up. They were forced to open things up to try and get back into the game. But I'm going to sound like a broken record here, Greg. Yeah. The Lightning matched it. I mean, they matched that defensive intensity, that commitment to D'ing up. They didn't give up much. And at the other end, they didn't get impatient. I think Tyler Johnson talked about that post-game. They didn't go sniffing for offense and leave themselves open to a counterattack. Kind of what the Stars had to do in the third, essentially. But when the game's 1-1 and, you know, the Lightning are struggling to just even get shots to the net, they didn't get out of their own structure, which I think is another really positive sign. I shouldn't say another positive sign, because the Lightning have been doing this over the last several games. So, you know, Jamie Benn gets a penalty at 15:21 of the second period. That's the penalty that led to the Killorn power play goal. At that point, shots were 10-8 Dallas.
bad penalty, too.
You know, 35 and a half minutes into the game, 10-8 were the shots. And they were only 4-4 in the second period at that point. And that's kind of how that game went. So both teams were really dug in defensively. Even the Tyler Johnson goal, like, Haskinen is trying to make a play there, and he gets stripped at the offensive blue line, and his momentum is carrying him one way, and you think it's going to be an odd man rush coming back the other way, because Haskinen's one of their defensemen, and now he's kind of out of the play. The Stars hustled back. I mean, if you watch a replay of that goal, Johnson's open, but one of the reasons why Johnson is open is the Lightning got a little bit of a lucky bounce there. Killorn's pass to Cirelli hits off Oleksiak's skate and comes right to Johnson. But when Johnson gets the puck, it's a 3-on-3. Like, Haskinen has hustled back. That's not an on-man rush. It's a little bit of a weird carom that led to an open look for Johnson, and he buried it. But the Stars were showing that all night long. Commitment to blocking shots, commitment to structure, commitment to not giving up odd-man rushes. And the Lightning didn't let how their opponent was playing affect what they were doing. That, and I think that that is something that we have seen repeatedly over these last few games. And then, you know, they were able to make a couple of plays. Killorn scores in the power play. Point strips Lindell, makes a play in front. I didn't think Ottinger gave his team many saves last night either. They could have used a save or two from him. Maybe the Killorn tap-in, fair enough. But Johnson beats him with a clean shot. Point dekes him down. I know it's an open chance in front, but Ottinger's way out of the net there. And Gord is screening him on the Chernak goal, but, I mean, it's still a fairly long-range shot that just beats him cleanly. So that is what it is. But the Lightning were able to pop in a couple of goals late second, and that changed the way the third period unfolded. And the Lightning had more open looks, even though they didn't score until Chernak made it 4-2. But to me, again, the takeaway was how the Lightning defended.
Yes, I would agree with that. And also, too, you know, these timely goals. We saw Braden Point, a really good individual play there, Dave, as we saw with Lindell getting the puck from him. And then the ability to, it was basically, what, a toe drag backhand. And that's something we've seen from Braden Point over the last month, really has been the engine that has moved this team offensively. And then, too, Eric Chernak. You know, we've talked about him defensively and what he can do. Sneaky good offensively this year. He's got, what, 5 goals, had 3 points last night, a timely goal again. And in a year where it's been pretty evident how difficult it is sometimes to get shots through screens and defensemen who are blocking shots, I think Chernak is one of the few players on that back end that on most occasions, not all, but on most occasions, can get that puck through that first wave of defense. And it's a skill set. And let's face it, Dave, come playoff time, that is going to be a big weapon. If you can get that puck through, doesn't always have to be on net. You see that carom off the back wall sometimes, and if you have some players in front for a rebound, that can be pretty big. But it was good to see Chernak continue to shoot when called upon and move in offensively when he can. And I think he continues to be really, as Rick Bonus was saying, he kind of reaffirmed the player he thought he could be this year when he spoke to the media last night or yesterday before the game about Chernak. I think his play this year, Dave, has been similar to the steps Sergachev took last year. And I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, when we have this conversation about protecting players and not protecting players for the expansion draft, I think everybody now kind of agrees, having watched him this year and really the last year or so, that Chernak needs to be one of those players protected because he is a valuable member to that back end.
Well, what can't he do? I mean, he can skate. He's big and strong. He can shoot. He's tough. He closes guys. He wins puck battles. And when I say he can skate, not only can he skate with speed, he's strong in his skates. Like when he gets the puck and a guy is leaning on him, particularly when he's trying to come out of the defensive zone, he's often able to kind of maintain his balance. He shrugs the guy off. He doesn't lose control of the puck. He makes a good first pass out of the defensive zone. He is a rock solid defender. And maybe with confidence, the points are coming more readily for him now. I mean, he's been very consistent in his goal production. He has scored 5 goals in each of his 3 NHL seasons so far, although this year he has played the fewest number of games because it's a shortened season and he's missed time with injury. And in the shortened season in which he has missed time with injury, he's now set a career high in points. He had 3 last night. He's got 18 points this year. The 2 assists were on empty netters, but they count, right? They all count.
Yeah.
And particularly the first empty netter, that was a really nice pass he made to Joseph out of the defensive zone. That was on the Colton empty netter. So good for Chernak.
It's been surprising. Yeah, it's been surprising. And what a trade that's been. You know, we talk about how the Lightning, Dave, have been able to draft and develop players. But you take a look at that back end right now. I mean, Chernak, Sergachev, McDonough, and Ruta specifically, all acquired via trades.
Yeah.
Think about that. And you got 2 of those guys who you think are probably going to be mainstays on that back end for years to come. I mean, Dave, that's so hard to do, to get one defenseman that can be the guy that you need to play big minutes. But, you know, the Lightning have those 2 youngsters. You've got Kyle Foote in the system, who you think is just going to keep getting better and better. Victor Hedman, I think we all would agree, is in the prime of his career and doesn't show any signs of slowing down. McDonough is a very, very rock-solid defenseman. Again, I don't know if all these guys will be together for the next 3, 4, or 5 years. But it's a group that has a very high ceiling. And a couple of those guys are really young still. And it just speaks to probably the Lightning's ability to go out and identify talent. And more importantly, Dave, develop it. Because I think that's the second part that sometimes gets overlooked, is being able to get these guys to play at a high level, kind of like a Ross Colton who comes up. You know, it's one thing to say, we thought Ross Colton had a lot of good characteristics when we signed him and we drafted him. Okay, but what does he do when he gets to the NHL? Guy hasn't missed a beat. Dave, he's got 9 goals. 9 goals.
Yeah.
I mean, that sticks out as a guy who hasn't played all year. Kudos to the Lightning for identifying that talent.
And I will just say, like, there is a difference between acquiring Ryan McDonough when, you know, he was the captain of the Rangers and one of the top defensemen in the NHL, which cost a significant amount. I mean, the Lightning had to give up a lot to get McDonough and JT Miller in that trade back at the deadline in the 2018 trade deadline. But there's a difference between bringing in a Ryan McDonough and trading for either Chernak or Sergachev, who are also different. But the similarity with Chernak and Sergachev, when the Lightning acquired those players, they not yet even played one. Well, I shouldn't say that. Sergachev played 4 NHL games in a season with Montreal before he was sent back to junior. But they really hadn't gotten to the NHL yet. So that is the situation where the Lightning scouting staff watching guys still in junior hockey. So they're still scouting the players that they may want to be drafting, looking at 2 players who have been drafted by other teams and recognizing that talent. Now, another difference between Sergachev and Chernak, Chernak did have a year in the minors. So when you talk about development, that year in Syracuse benefited him sure. Sergachev did not have a year in the minors, but Sergachev was able to learn kind of on the fly at the NHL level. That first season for him, 17-18, you know, the Lightning did what they could to protect him, mostly offensive zone faceoff starts, not exposing him to tough matchups best they could, limiting his ice time. They allowed him to grow at the NHL level, which sometimes is difficult to do. But he had earned the spot and deserved to be in the NHL, but he didn't have the year in the minors like Chernak had. That is very, very different than acquiring a Ryan McDonagh, who, you know, is already an elite player.
Well, you're right.
In the NHL. I understand what you're saying, like acquiring defensemen, but, you know, in a way is what you're talking about. Like Chernak and Sergachev were developed under the Lightning umbrella.
They were. And getting back to McDonagh briefly, I remember having Dan Rosen on the day after that trade. And I remember Dan having some questions about McDonagh a bit because of all the wear and tear on his body.
He'd
had
a lot of injuries too that year.
He did. And so I don't think he thought it was going to be as great of a trade for the Lightning as it has become. And I think in some ways, Dave, you have no way of knowing how a player is going to respond at a certain point in his career after playing so many games and then being dealt. But the Lightning felt it was worth the risk bringing in a McDonagh and maybe having him playing below Victor Hedman, not asking him to play the minutes Hedman's playing, although you're asking him to still play some pretty significant minutes. And I think that ended up working really well, obviously, for the Lightning. And for the Rangers, you know, I think it was the start of that rebuilding process. But when you take a look at some of the players they did get back, I think they probably wish there was a little bit more there. Those players are still developing, specifically Howden. But I remember when that trade was made, too, there were a lot of people who were upset about Howden being, you know, a guy that was going to be a second-line center, possibly, and really be a fixture for this Lightning team. Last time I checked, he didn't have as many goals as Eric Chernak this year, and I know he's had some injuries, too. But it hasn't worked out, I don't think, for the Rangers the way they had hoped. But I think more importantly, it probably for them signaled to their fan base, we're going to be rebuilding, and this is how we're going to go about it. And that probably was more significant in many ways than the actual players they got. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can. When we return, we've got Jeff Halpern coming up, Lightning assistant coach. And, you know, Dave, I think it's good to catch up with these Lightning coaches right before the playoffs, too, because there's a lot we want to get to with Halpy, especially faceoffs. I think that's one of the things that is so important come playoff time. And the division for the Lightning is better than most would think when it comes to guys winning faceoffs. But I know those are a few questions we want to ask Halpy.
Yeah, Halpy's a great resource. Really smart guy, not just because he went to Princeton, but he's a very knowledgeable hockey person. He was always very knowledgeable and tuned in to what was going on when he was a player, and he has really blossomed as a coach, both at the AHL level initially and the last couple of years with the Lightning as well.
Yeah, maybe a head coach in the waiting there in the wings, and we'll see hopefully down the road for his sake, but for the Lightning's sake, glad to have him on the staff. We'll talk to him when we return. Get those questions in as well at Bolts Radio. He's Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linnelli. It's Lightning Power Play.
The perfect social distancing distraction for your lunch hour. This is Power Lunch, only on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
We would like to welcome in Lightning assistant coach Jeff Halpern to Lightning Power Play. And Halpy, thanks for joining us. It has been so noteworthy how well the Lightning are defending in recent games. And certainly they've made great strides since the low point, that loss in Nashville last month. Specifically, what are the Lightning doing well right now that's helping them defend so well and hold teams in many instances to like 25 shots a game or less?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing, I think a good goalie can make anything look good. And I think between Vass, Gibby, when he, you know, this weekend when he played against Detroit, I think when the goalies are able to make saves for your team, some confidence. And, I think we've done some things well. And I think the biggest thing from what you were talking about that game in Nashville is we were giving up so many odd man rushes against, and I think it's just being more aware and conscious of having our forward supporting the D, whether it's backing them up or whether having kind of a three man layer behind the other team, it's prevented those easy goals. And that's, I think more than anything, you don't want to give teams chances like that.
this strong stretch of defensive play has coincided with you guys seeing a lot of teams that also play really structured defensive hockey, thinking of Dallas, Detroit, Columbus, and you guys, other than maybe last night, have had a hard time scoring. Have you been impressed with how the Lightning have stayed patient and not sniffed for offense, like Coop talks about not sacrificing defense for offense in these recent games?
Yeah, well, I think drawing from last year's playoffs and something that we focused on last season and this season is not to press for offense, to make sure that we're like our mindset is okay winning games, you know, 1-0, 2-1, and not overextending ourselves for offense. And that's not to, you know, it's not to say that we approach games with a cautious approach and kind of a safe approach. Like we, if anything, our team is a, you know, we live on our forecheck and how hard we press teams and how, make it uncomfortable for them. And a lot of our offense comes from those turnovers. But I think to your point, it's more of us not pressing for offense. And what I mean by that is not taking chances, stepping up against the other team when they have the puck, or, you know, our forwards not having a third man back protecting our D if they do pinch up. And I think sometimes just those reminders for our team, especially when you play structure teams like you've talked about in the last really all season, but in the last few weeks especially, I think those reminders kind of reinforce the, you know, what we've been talking about the last season.
And a quick follow-up to that, is that hard, particularly for guys who like to score and a team that is used to scoring a lot, to stay disciplined, to not sniff for goals when you know that it may come back and bite you at the other end of the ice?
Yeah, well, I think our group, our group of forwards, group of defensemen, I think they're very responsible. They're very professional in their approach. And I, you know, everybody wants to have not just goals, but good, you know, offensive touches and zone time and those sort of things. But it really, like, the more disciplined you are as far as being above, you know, terminology we use is being above the puck and supporting our defense when they gap up. I don't think that sacrifices offense. Players or teams that maybe they're a little loose leaving their defensive zone, hoping they get a loose puck in the offensive zone, or they take a long route in the offensive zone, hoping there's a turnover and they're the last ones back. I think those kind of things can creep into a team. But as far as our group, I think we're very responsible in those areas.
Jeff Halpern joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Jeff, you're hopefully going to be getting three important players back for the first round of the playoffs, and Rutsa, Stammer, and Cooch. And I'm wondering, we know every player is different, but does it take a little bit more time for a defenseman getting back to his game after missing quite a few games compared to skill forwards, or is it the other way around?
I don't know. I mean, going from my own personal experience, I don't know what, as far as defense. The one thing I think is much harder for forwards is there's a lot more stopping and starting and kind of bursting into you know, open spaces that close real quick. And it's hard to replicate that and almost the conditioning of that, of those short little bursts and stopping and jumping to the next hole. When you play defense, a lot of times it's more of setting your gaps and kind of gauging the speed that players are coming at you. But I would almost think that's easier than, say, a forward coming back and all of a sudden having to kind of stop and jump into those holes. And to me, it's more of a conditioning than anything else.
Halpy, I did want to ask you a specific question about Braden Point's faceoffs. You go back to last year, he was over 50% during the regular season, and then he had a great playoff. He was up around 58%, and he took more faceoffs than any other player on the Lightning in the bubble. And this year, I mean, it's been a significant drop-off. He's been in the 40s, mid-40s. He's improved lately, went 8-1 last night. He's had some 12-4 games recently. Can you put your finger on what has happened here to him? And is this just like a blip? Like, do you feel confident that as we get into the playoffs, he'll regain the form that he showed last year?
I mean, it's obviously it remains to be seen. I think the one thing with Pointer, and almost to your point about improving recently, I think maybe 3 weeks ago or so, as a team, we talked about it, and we just did a little competition after practice one day, and Pointer won that competition. And I think the one thing with him is, I think when he is, you know, hyper focused on winning a faceoff, I think he does very well. And I think maybe going back to the playoffs last year, like, you know, those are all really big faceoffs. And when he's focused in those situations, he's done really well. Not even to make an excuse for it, but some of the centers that have been in our division that you're up against time and again, and, you know, whether it's Staal or Glenn Denning and Jamie Benn and Pavelski, like there's really good faceoff guys in our division. There's good faceoff guys around the league. But I think for Pointer, I'm hopeful that the trend of late will kind of take him back to where, at least numbers wise, where he was last year. I know it's in him, and I know like he's confident in what he's doing right now, and kind of realizing or seeing the maybe a small difference in the way he had been taking them earlier in this year.
Jeff, in terms of what you ask him to do on a daily basis, can you make the argument that Yanni Gourde, maybe next to Braden Point this year, has been your most consistent forward?
Well, as far as consistency, the one consistent thing with Gourde is like he works hard every day, every practice, every shift, every battle. Like there's never a moment where he's not the hardest working player on the ice. And it's hard to say that because so many players work that hard, but it's amazing. For me, it's amazing to watch his stamina and his energy at times. Like, you know, we have to yell at him to come off the ice because he's still going full speed all the time. And I think with, you know, as far as people that drive our team, obviously like Victor Hedman drives our team from the back end, and a slew of players in that way for our defense. Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli are like our centers that kind of drive our team up front. But when you're able to throw Gourde over the boards, you know, every shift, every game, and know exactly what you're getting, and know how miserable it is for other teams to play against, like, you know, to your point, it gives our team an identity and a consistency that's hard to play against.
How challenging has this year been for you working the power play? You're missing Kucherov the whole year, so you have to make some adjustments right off the hop. And then you pull Stamkos out for the last month, and you need to make another adjustment on the power play. How challenging has that been for you to kind of design something to put guys in positions on the ice where they can have success?
Well, I think it's challenging, but, I mean, there's a lot of really, really skilled players on this team that, you know, no matter if Cooch is in the lineup or Stammer, like you're still trying to find a group that's able to create offense consistently and kind of come up with an identity for each group. And some of the things as far as the structure and the recoveries are no matter who's in the lineup will remain the same. I think more than anything, you can, even as a fan or a spectator watching, when Stammer's on the ice or Kucherov's on the ice, you kind of know exactly what to expect. I think when we've put different groups together, it's taken a while to figure out where the good quality chances are going to come from, or the good, you know, the goals have come from. And some of it is just basic. Getting pucks to certain spots on the ice, whether it's to the defense or the flanks, and having net front and screens and traffic. And some of it are some of the plays that each individual is able to make. And so it's been challenging, but honestly, it's been fun. Like, it's easy to sit back and, watch Stammer and Cooch and kind of work their magic and have a ton of success. As a coach, it's been fun for me trying to find those connections and those groups of people. I've really enjoyed watching Pally this year. Like, he took on that role and did a really good job and was able to create offense. I think Pointer, in the way that he plays, has always been able to, you know, whether it's from breakouts or recoveries or being a threat, he's been very versatile in that group, and it kind of goes throughout the lineup. Our second power play as well, we haven't had as much success at times, but I still think we've been able to build on things that will help us move it in the playoffs.
Jeff Helprin joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Jeff, as a coach, are you preparing and watching tape on your possible first round matchups right now? And maybe because of the amount of times you've played these teams in the regular season, do you think the first round of the playoffs will be less about X's and O's and more about execution at that point?
Well, to answer the first part, obviously we're coming up to play Florida this weekend. It's lining up. It looks like we're going to play Florida. We know, the other possibilities, but for us, for scouting, for whether it's scouting their penalty kill for for me, or even just the 5-on-5, I think as a group we've started to note, take notes of their games or gather video of their games. And we've already played them 6 times. We have somewhat of an idea of what works against them, what doesn't work. But to your point, it's already building, and it's probably a process that maybe we're a little, it's a little easier this year because you know exactly what the matchups are most likely going to look like.
Last one for me, Halpy, and maybe this is not an exact contrast, and you can tell me if it's off base, but last year in the playoffs, you guys saw 4 teams that were really structured defensively, and that's not to say that Florida and Carolina aren't structured defensively, but if you do see Florida or you do see Carolina, I'm not sure that any of the teams you saw in the playoffs last year play with the same pace that those teams play with. Does that change kind of how you guys need to go about your business in the playoffs, like the strengths and relative strengths of your opponent that might be different from last year? Or is it just like you guys have to do what you need to do, whether you're facing a team that's super structured or a team that they can really put you back on their heels with team speed? Which is not to say that the teams you saw last year didn't have team speed, but you know where I'm going with that.
Yeah, well, I think that's a fair statement that you made as far as the pace of the way the teams we played last year. I mean, I remember game one against Dallas last year. It felt like there was 6 players for Dallas on the ice the whole game. Like, it was amazing, the pace, and every time we had the puck, it looked like there were 3 guys in front of us. And that was almost overwhelming, that first game, and seeing that team. Obviously, Florida and Carolina are teams that we're familiar with because we play them so many times. And I think style-wise, I think Carolina would be the most different than maybe those 4 teams from last year. I think, the like you said, the pace that Florida plays out is a high level. But, structurally, I think it may be a little more similar to some of those other teams. I don't know if it's anything that we change our game about. There's obviously certain adjustments that you make, depending on the team you're playing, but I don't think we're gonna show up kind of our first practice day next week and say, okay, we have to change X, Y, and Z because of the way those teams are playing. You have to be aware of them. You have to make a couple of adjustments, but you still want to kind of impose your identity and your strengths on the game.
Jeff, before we let you go, home ice advantage, you played, you now coach. Is it as big a deal today than it maybe was 15, 20 years ago? I mean, really in any sport, because of the parity, it seems like in every league, it doesn't make that much of a difference. But I'm curious, for you guys, how do you look at, starting a series on the road, starting a series on home ice, and does it make a difference at all in your opinion?
I think it does. Matchups does weigh into it, especially in the playoffs when given the chance to get the last change. I do think it helps. I think the emotion of a building, and obviously last year in the playoffs, I would have told you it had little to do with it because there was no fans, and from game to game, other than the benches that we were using, it didn't seem like much of a difference. I think for even having a certain number of fans in the building, and I think that's going to increase by a little bit. I think it adds little pushes at times, like if you're winning a game at home and every time it, you know, leaves your end, you kind of get a jolt from the crowd. And I think some of that noise and that feeling can add to momentum, especially the way a lot of teams play now, like you said, with pace. And when you start getting on teams and there is a crowd reaction, I do think that has an impact on the game. We would love to have home ice for as long as possible, and it's something that we've talked about and hoping to get in these last few games.
Well, Jeff, this was great stuff. We appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk a little hockey with us. Good luck the rest of the way, and maybe we'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, that is Jeff Halpern, a Lightning assistant coach, taking some time out of his busy schedule, Dave, and always good to catch up with a Lightning coach heading into the playoffs here, because especially with a guy who played the game at a high level and now has been a really successful assistant coach, you always wonder, you know, what they're going through this time of year with the playoffs so close, but yet wanting to finish the season on a high note.
You're right. And he said some interesting things. The most recent thing he said in answer to your last question was he feels home ice does matter, which is a little contradictory to what John Cooper said at the morning skate press conference yesterday. He pointed out all these teams that have won on the road in the playoffs, which is true. But the fact that they have talked about that in the room is interesting.
Yep.
And Phil last night in the air said that he feels it's really important for the Lightning to get home ice, at the very least, in a potential playoff series against the Panthers. I thought it was interesting what he said about point. I asked Phil, and sometimes Phil and I talk, and I can't remember if it's on air or off air. This might have been off air. But I asked him about point.
Yeah.
And the face-off disparity in percentage from last year, especially in the playoffs last year, to this year. And Phil said, I think it's mental. That's what he said. Like, it's the how dialed in are you? And Jeff Halpern kind of said the same thing. I mean, here's his answer. He said, you know, when Braden Point really bears down and really focuses, and it's a really important face-off.
Yeah, it's a focus.
Yeah, he does very well. And he kind of said in the playoffs that the face-offs are really important. He also acknowledged that this division has some really good face-off guys. Did he mention Johansson? I can't remember.
Think is the best face-off guy in this division?
Well, statistically, it's Glenn Denning.
Yeah.
And Glenn Denning and Point took a lot of face-offs this year. But I will point out that the two of Point's better face-off games, actually, I guess four, because they played Detroit four games fairly late. I think Braden did pretty well in those last four. And he mentioned Jamie Benn. Johansson's really good on Nashville.
Barkov's pretty good, right?
And Barkov is good. Although, I think Gord ends up taking a fair number of faceoffs against Barkov. That's a matchup situation there.
Correct.
But I think it's a good sign that Point has had some good faceoff games recently. And last night, he was terrific. He went 8-1. I did not know about that faceoff competition that they had in practice. But it almost seemed like Halpern referred to that as a launch pad for Point's turnaround on faceoffs. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
That he mentioned that. He talked about Palat, how much he's liked Palat in the power play this year. If Kucherov is there and healthy, Kucherov is in that spot. Now, maybe Palat's on the other side, like he was in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
When Stamkos wasn't there. But Stamkos was there for much of the year.
It'll be interesting to see what that power play unit is, Dave. You know, if everybody's back ready to go. Because I think they had Killorn when we were talking to Bernsey about when everybody was practicing and they went down the other end to work on the power play, the first unit. I think it had Killorn there too, you know, with Kuch and Stammer.
Right. So if you add Kucherov and Stamkos back in the first unit, maybe Palat moves to the second unit. But now you know Palat can do damage from that spot.
Sure.
So maybe that's an option for you on power play too. And the last thing that I'll say about the interview that I thought was noteworthy, I asked that question to Halpern about kind of the styles, because I've talked about this on the air, how structured the teams were.
Yeah.
The Lightning saw it in the playoffs last year, and how maybe a little bit different Carolina and Florida are to those teams. And also, we have talked about the difference between Carolina and Florida. And I think I have said, to me, Florida seems a little bit more structured defensively than Carolina. Carolina can overwhelm you with their forecheck, which is kind of how they defend the best. And Halpe kind of acknowledged that, didn't he? I mean, he said, you know, to me, Florida is more similar to the teams we saw in the playoffs last year, even though they play, you know, with a very fast pace. And what he said was their structure. So that kind of is how I have seen things this year. Again, we're talking about on the margins here, but like, what are the difference between Florida and Carolina? I think Florida, maybe when you get them in their own zone, they D up maybe a little tighter in their structure than Carolina. But Carolina poses other problems, which is why Halpe said they are probably the most different from the teams that we saw in the playoffs last year. Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
It was
that he said that.
Yeah, for sure. You know what? I had written down too, Dave, and I was hesitant to ask him because I don't know how open they're going to be. It wasn't going to be specifically about Tom Wilson, but it was going to be asking, and I think this is something maybe you and I can get into a little later on as well, is just this notion of the game and the players policing themselves. And the less fighting that we see in the game today, you wonder if the league has to be more of the police officer than the players. Because if you're going to take that out of the game for the most part, and you're going to try and cut down on these vicious hits, do you have to look at the league more than you do the players and say, well, we've kind of handcuffed you guys a little bit with what we want you to do and what we don't want you to do in games. And when somebody crosses the line, it's almost like nobody knows how to respond appropriately on the ice anymore. Does the league have to come down with a bigger whip and crack down on this more so than what maybe they did 25 years ago, where you had an enforcer basically on every team who could handle some business?
But I think Phil said this on the air last night, didn't he? He did not like what happened with the Rangers and Capitals last night.
Yeah, he hated
the orchestrated fights.
Yes, yes.
He does not like that when guys fight right off a face-off. He is more amenable to a fight that breaks out more spontaneously in the context of what is happening on a particular play.
And I know you don't, and you're not suggesting this, and we obviously know. I think Phil just hates that stuff in general. You know, and obviously he was a different player as well, but
right.
I think...
But he certainly was around.
He wasn't. Oh, he
that
was.
Stuff.
Yeah, he was. I mean, and look, he had to drop the gloves too. You go and YouTube some some Phil Esposito situations. I think we do live in a different world today, Dave, when it comes to that type of thing. And I think this is where the messaging is a little confusing from the league, because you want to take a lot of this stuff out of the game, but you still have it in the game. So as long as it's still in the game, there's going to be an opportunity for things like the other night to happen. The question becomes, are the penalties off ice appropriate, and do they fit the description of what happened on the ice anymore? And I'm not sure there is, and there's a disconnect. I wish I would have asked Jeff that question, because I would have been curious to hear his response. As somebody who, you know, played and saw a lot of that stuff go down, I was curious just to see how that would have all transpired. But maybe that'll be asked on another day. We had a lot to get to with Halpe. We'll take a break. We'll come back. He's Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linnelli. Get those questions in at Bolts Radio. Back after this on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Dave. First off, thanks to Jeff Halpern. We didn't ask him this question. We should have. But I feel like... Would you say this show has been at the forefront of the Vasi for MVP?
And see, I confess to being in a bubble. I am in a Lightning bubble, and I am in a Power Lunch bubble. So I don't know who else is talking about Vasi.
Well, we know. I think it's picked up a little bit over the last month from some national guys, for sure. I don't know if anybody has been as...
The Patrick Kane talk has definitely died down as the Hawks playoff hopes
flickered
and gone black.
I think McDavid's going to get it because of the year he's having. And We can agree. We can disagree on Connor McDavid. I mean, look, his team's going to make the playoffs. They are. He's almost approaching 100 points in a short schedule. We all understand that. And we know that Edmonton's a pretty flawed team. So, in many ways, I understand that. If he gets the heart, so be it. It's not the be-all, end-all. It was more of thinking outside the box a bit. But there it is. Joe Smith, Dave.
Joe Smith did an article. Vasi for heart.
Vasi for heart.
Well, is he? I haven't read the article yet. Has he come out and said, I believe Vasi should get the Hart Trophy. I'm putting him number one on my list.
I want to be very clear about this. I have not read the article either.
But, well, I'll give you.
I'm skimming it right now.
All right, I'll give you some firsthand, hot off the microphone, because we don't have a press here. Because I just got an email. It wasn't an email. I got a notification yesterday. They are going to be sending out the Coach of the Year ballots via email next week, or maybe this week.
Yeah,
they're like, keep an eye out for it. So I've started thinking about it, and I'll tell you some guys I'm thinking about. So I get to pick three. I do not get to pick five, unlike in these other races that involve players, because clearly there are more players than there are coaches. So I understand why they do that. In the Central Division, I am considering Joel Quenneville and Rod Brindamore. And for the reason for that, and like I always consider Coop, and I did vote for Coop the year the Lightning won 62 at the top, deservedly so. I mean, I understand that you're putting your vote in before the playoffs begin. Mm-hmm. The Lightning have had a really good year, and it has been a challenging year. But I think Carolina has exceeded expectations, and they could win the President's Trophy this year as we speak today. And I think it's beyond question the Florida Panthers have exceeded expectations this year. And I have been really, really impressed with both of those teams. Those are kind of the easier ones because we've seen them a lot, right? I think you had mentioned Rick Bowness. He has done a heck of a job this year keeping his team in it, but it does look like the Stars are going to miss the playoffs. And I have to put other coaches ahead of him in that regard. Mm-hmm. So those are the two from the Central Division. I think John Hines might get some votes based on how Nashville has turned things around. But the two from the Central, along with Coop, are going to get consideration for me. In the other divisions, you have opened my eyes to Mike Sullivan. I'm going to take a look at that and give it some consideration based on where the Penguins were kind of expected to be. They may finish first in that East Division. And while I haven't seen them play a lot, I think based on kind of where their projection was and how they are playing and how they've handled Washington this year has been really impressive. I'm going to give a hard look at Sheldon Keefe. And I know that we have kind of felt that the Canadian division is all offense, but I've heard from enough people now that the Leafs are defending well as scoring a lot. I mean, Austin Matthews is having a phenomenal season. As great as McDavid has been, Matthews has been a goal-scoring machine. So Toronto has done it with offense, but they've also defended very well by all accounts this year. I think that is probably the bigger progression for the Maple Leafs. So those are some of the ones that I'm looking at right off the hop. And I think Minnesota deserves consideration. I just haven't watched them a lot this year. And that's another one that's kind of exceeding expectations category based on where they are. But those are the names that I'm going to take a good hard look at. And then I don't know the order. I don't know who's going to make my final three.
Yeah.
But that's kind of where my head is at. Unless you can look, I'm open. If you want to try and sell me on somebody else, I'll take a look at it too.
Look, I you know, Cooper, I think should always be in the running.
He should. Yes.
I think, you know, whether you vote for him to be the coach of the year or not, I think he always should get votes because let's face it, it's nice to sit there and say he's got a loaded team. As you know, Dave, each year is treated differently. No Kucherov this year, and you had a lot of injuries.
And they knew they needed a good start after a shorter offseason, and
I think
they
there's
did
something
that
to be said for managing the goaltending, managing the schedule. I think, you know, just because you have a good team doesn't mean your coach or a player on that team should be penalized for achieving success when it comes to getting awards. And I think John Cooper deserves to get credit for the job he and his staff have done this year. Mike Sullivan's a really good one. The Penguins have been really bad in the playoffs the last 2 years.
But we have to submit our votes before the playoffs start.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, like, the last 2 years, just speaking to where he's gotten this team to this year, they were really bad the last couple of years in terms of the playoffs. I don't know what's going to happen with them this year. I think Jim Rutherford does deserve some credit of getting a better team around Crosby and Malkin this year. They do have depth, but one thing you keep hearing from people who cover the Penguins is that they're back to playing that style that Sullivan likes, which is similar to maybe Carolina where, and Lightning. They like
push
to impose
pace.
Their will, push the pace. And the goaltending, maybe you're not sold on it. Fair point. Jarry and DeSmith have been good enough. Whether that's championship caliber remains to be seen. But I'm not sure anybody – let's put it this way. There were a lot of people that had Pittsburgh missing the playoffs this year, and I might have been one of those people when it came to that division. So in Minnesota, honestly, if you were to ask people – right now, name five players on the Wild. I doubt they could do it. Maybe they might not even be able to name the head coach.
Parisi?
And that's a fair point. Yeah. So, I mean,
Ryan Suter? Jared Spurgeon?
There you go.
I know.
Dumba.
It's unfair.
You got Dumba. But, I mean, they're a team that's always been known for just lack of scoring. And I feel like they've had a couple of guys this year who have come up and rookies that have made an impact. But I don't think anybody had Minnesota on their radar in terms of a team making the playoffs this year. So, that option certainly is on the tables. And I think you mentioned with Keith, that's a solid choice as well. So
yeah.
I think you've nailed it in terms of who you're looking at, and I don't think you can go wrong.
And look, you only get three. So, you know, Pete DeBoer in Vegas, heck of a job. I mean, there's no question.
Correct.
Bednar in Colorado, great job. You know, look at the job that Craig Berube has done at St. Louis. I mean, they've kind of turned things around, and it looks like they are going to make the playoffs, and they are going to be a tough out for whoever gets them in the first round. But you can only pick three, right?
And
I think there is going to be some inherent bias here, which is not unconscious bias. It's conscious bias. But I have to give greater weight to the teams that I have seen in person. And look, if people outside the Central Division, broadcasters outside the Central Division, don't give consideration to the teams in the Central Division, then they are doing a disservice. Joel Quenneville, in conjunction with Bill Zito, because Bill Zito changed the makeup of the team, but Joel Quenneville has completely transformed the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
That deserves an acknowledgement.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. What is unconscious bias, by the way?
That means that you have a bias without recognizing it. Like, I'm acknowledging, like, I've seen the Central Division, so I'm going to have a bias toward the teams that I've seen the most.
Interesting. I mean,
I'm just giving you all kinds of lessons.
I know. Well, we always
I did the psychology lesson the other day that you're more sensitive to your team's flaws. Which goes, although I think you're pretty fair about this, but it does dovetail with, I thought the Penguins are going to miss the playoffs this year.
Well, yeah, I mean, people may say, like, you have an unconscious bias with Pittsburgh, and I joke around. I'm like, I'm not sure there's anybody who's harder on that team than I am when I start talking.
Right.
And same with
Lightning. You have a conscious bias toward paying attention to Pittsburgh. You are completely out in the open that you do pay attention to the Penguins, as you should. I mean, they were your team growing up.
I do.
Up,
growing
right?
up, you know, you follow them, and then you
did you see them at all in the blue jerseys, or you were too young for that?
No.
They had already changed.
Dave, I'm not that old. Come on.
I guess not. They changed the same year that the Pirates and Steelers won their championships,
I think they're the only
right?
teams that have the same color. Like the Steelers, Pirates, and Penguins all have the same.
They just need an NBA team. The fish that saved
Pittsburgh. They tried that. They tried that.
Dr. J.
That was awful. That was.
They had an NBA team?
They had a, not the NBA, but was the league.
I don't know. What else is there? Pitt basketball?
No, they had a professional team. It was like the
They're
Pittsburgh
blue,
Explosion.
Right? Pitt's blue and gold?
Yeah, blue and gold. Yeah. Basketball really and never took off in Pittsburgh, and a lot of people believe it's just
you're thinking the Condors, Pittsburgh Condors,
you've got
the ABA,
the ABA. That's right.
Okay.
ABA. Yes.
Yeah, that's going back kind of before my sports consciousness.
Yeah, that was although that
there's our Dr. J connection, right?
Yes, I mean so that
he went from the ABA to the NBA to the big screen, or maybe it went straight to the little screen.
Maybe
the fish that saved Pittsburgh.
The fish that saved Pittsburgh. That's right. You know, basketball.
People can Google that.
What the heck are these two guys talking about? The fish that saved Pittsburgh. I thought it was Mario.
That was like
Pittsburgh.
The movie version of the White Shadow, kind of.
The White
like
Shadow.
Like the same grainy picture quality.
When is the last time you saw that movie, The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh? I've
it
never
has
seen
been a
that
long
movie.
Time. Have you never
How bad
seen
was it?
It?
How bad was it?
Well, it's a feel good movie because the team was terrible and Dr. J helps them,
of course,
turn things around. He saved Dr. Pittsburgh. J.
That was released in 1979. How about that?
When did he get to the Sixers? Did he get to the Sixers after that movie or before? It had to have been before.
Let me see.
The Sixers played the Lakers in 1980.
So he played for the Sixers from 76 to 87.
All right, so he had made the shift to the NBA. So my chronology was right. ABA to NBA to the big or little screen.
From 71 to 73, Virginia Squires. Then from 73 to 76, Dave, the New York Nets.
I remember him with the Nets.
And then he went to the 76ers.
I remember him with the Nets after he had left the Nets. I was not really paying attention.
Was that your favorite basketball player? Growing up?
No. I grew up in the Boston area. So he was on the enemy team.
You were Bill Russell?
I'm not that old. No, I kind of came into NBA consciousness with Bird. Yeah.
Okay,
so
Bird,
those
Magic.
Celtics teams, All Bird, right. McHale, Parrish.
So that, you grew up the good old days of basketball. I mean, a lot of people will look at that and say that was pretty special. Because then you had guys like Moses Malone. You still had, you know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
You talk about a rivalry. So the Celtics and the Sixers had a huge rivalry in the early to mid-80s, and they faced each other in the playoffs a number of years. But the Celtics-Lakers,
that was
like
great.
White hot.
Yeah,
what was strange was they only played each other twice, usually during the regular season. But they ended up meeting in the NBA Finals multiple times.
Yep.
So
that's how you get hooked on sports, Dave.
Yeah.
You get those rivalries. And the thing about Bird and Magic, that rivalry was always intertwined.
Right. And they pulled me in. I mean, I'm just acknowledging, right. Like I was paying attention to sports before Larry Bird joined the Celtics.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really paying attention to the NBA until then. And then I kind of, you know, you get.
When did you get into hockey?
Well, same time.
Around the same time?
Yeah, same time. So I was born in New York. I grew up in New York City until I was 8. And I remember the early hockey consciousness were the Rangers with Phil. Those teams. I remember following the Rangers when they got to the NHL Finals in 1979. We had moved to Massachusetts at that point. But then I kind of followed the Bruins during the Ray Bourque, Cam Neely, that time frame. So I kind of came of age as a teenager, you know, through high school with some really good Boston teams.
Did you
really good Boston teams? So I was a little bit spoiled. And then, you know, you leave home and I don't know if you find this with some of the Pittsburgh teams, but you start working in sports and your focus changes. And I kind of lost interest in the NBA as I started working in hockey. But I followed hockey, I mean, through my childhood. And you know, certainly when you're working in the game, you pay more attention to what is happening in the higher
leagues.
Well,
and I think also, too, you look at things differently. Like, the minute I became a broadcaster, even a producer, when I started out, you just look at teams differently. You don't have that rooting passion that you did as a fan. I think maybe some people still do, but I think to do your job well, you have to separate some of that emotion. You have to look at things. You have to be able to look at, in this specific example, you know, looking at the Penguins and saying, look, I think they're a flawed team. But you may get Fanboy who writes a blog and says, what are you talking about? They've got Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. It's okay.
Well,
yes,
and so I made the point that sometimes people who follow a team closely accentuate the flaws and don't acknowledge the positives, but I guess that that isn't always true, because sometimes you see these accounts that,
like, I think
that
I
are
think
tilted in one direction, positive toward the team that they are covering.
And that's true. He won't win the award this year, but I think you can make a case the year he's had, Sidney Crosby deserves some MVP votes. He's been really good this year for that team. He won't get it, but I think he does. You know, just like I think we looked at Vasi in the same way. By the way, I did read a little bit more of that article.
Yeah.
Joe does get some good quotes from Dominic Hasek, and Dominic Hasek is kind of on board with, I think, Vasi winning that
right
award.
Well, he won it himself in back-to-back years,
and he talks about how hard it is and how many games you probably need to play as a goaltender. And but, you know, the interesting thing about these awards, it's always funny, and that's why I made the case, did I bring this up yesterday on the show? I think I tweeted it out on Twitter, and I said that based off of being most valuable to your team, because again, we get into this thing, is he the best player on the team, is it the best player in the league, or is it most valuable? Well, if you go by most valuable, every year you could sit there and say it's the goaltender. I mean, if you really wanted to make that argument, you could say, well, where would this team be without Vasi?
Yeah.
You could say, where would this team be without Nedeljkovic or Mrazek? I mean, you understand the point. But, you know, I think when you take a look at Tyler Seguin, and Rick Bonus confirmed this a bit after the game last night, I said, look, if we had this guy the whole year, we'd be making the playoffs. There's no way we'd be missing the playoffs. That's why I said you could almost theoretically look at Seguin and say, give him a couple votes for MVP, just for the fact that he's been missing. And that's
that
been
be,
part of the
that
criteria.
That can be Joe's next article.
It will be. Well, listen, we're free of articles. I just said, give us a little royalty here, Dave, on the side if this thing takes off. But I think it's a fun conversation to have. All right, I think that's it for us today. Jeff Halperin, thank you for joining us. We always appreciate that. And then tomorrow, Dave, we've got the Lightning and Stars. We'll be live at the arena starting at 6 o'clock with Brian Burns and Kaylee Chellis. Of course, we'll be on the airways from noon to 1. Matt Larkin from the Hockey News will join us. We'll ask him about all these things nationally and how he's doing with his first vaccination or his vaccine shot. And we'll get up to date on how he's feeling. And then, of course, we've got the weekend with the Florida Panthers. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it. Great job,
as always. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, guys, thank you for listening. Thanks to Steve Versnick as well. We'll be with you tomorrow, noon to 1, on Lightning Power Play.